Hello, I'm Emily Grace, and welcome to the Stages podcast of Bernstein Private Wealth Management. Life throws lots of challenges at you. We're here to talk about them. Having helped families prioritize what makes money meaningful to them and then invest for that purpose for close to 20 years now, I've seen people through many markets and many life events. And while every market is different, what remains constant is the need for guidance and advice through all the uncertainty. I feel lucky to be able to help people navigate these markets and to be able to introduce them to some of the smartest investment minds and experts in other fields, whatever the stage in their life. If you or someone you know would like my advice or an introduction to my guest, you can reach me at emily.grace@bernstein.com. Today, I've invited Dara Quinlan of Firmenich to join me on the stage. Firmenich is the world's largest privately owned fragrance and flavor company. Dara has spent her career there in fragrances and risen through the ranks as a fragrance evaluator, working on some of the world's most popular fragrances. Dara, thank you for being here. I can't wait to learn more from you.
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, thank you. So first and foremost, you're a fragrance evaluator. What exactly does that mean?
Well, the people who actually create fragrances are called perfumers. And they really are artists. They're akin to composers or painters. And much like any artist, they're not particularly objective about their work. They need people to sort of help guide them, especially since it's a business. They need editors, if you will, to help direct their work towards the parameters of a particular project or a client. So what I do is really play the role of right hand to the perfumers and help guide them in a number of different ways. So it's my responsibility to know everything about the market, what's selling, what's launching. It's my responsibility to know everything I can about the client, their portfolio, opportunities in their portfolio, their particular olfactive tastes, which are very subjective.
Who would be the client, the end user or the person hiring you to create the perfume?
Well, it's a great question, and the answer is both. The people who pay my bills are are business clients. We're a business-to-business company, so yes. Big corporations like L'Oreal or Coty or Estee Lauder or even smaller companies who are launching their first fragrance. But ultimately, all of our clients are the end consumers, and so you have to keep them both in mind. And it's also our job to be sort of the creative muse of the perfumers, and like any artist, sometimes they need someone to push them. Sometimes they need someone to give them data. Sometimes they need someone to sit in their office and tell jokes. I have sat in someone's office many times, had teary conversations about very personal things, because any artistic creation is a sort of result of a lot of emotion. And the best fragrances are those that came from a really authentic emotion that has to be sort of teased out in the right way. So we're sort of... We wear a lot of hats, many of them psychological.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're a psychiatrist half the time.
Sometimes I feel that way. And you know, you have to change your demeanor based on who you're sitting with, you know, from one minute to the next. And that's our job, to sort of read the room and feel like, okay, well, who does this perfumer need me to be right now? What do they need?
And do you work with a select group of perfumers, or is it always somebody new? Like, do you have the opportunity to really get to know the artist with whom you're working, or?
Absolutely. So at our offices, we have about 7 perfumers, and I have, having worked there so many years, it's hard to count now, formed incredibly tight relationships with them. So we really know more about each other than I think you might realize. And we sit together and talk about everything from the creative process to our families. So yes, it's a very, very intimate relationship that you end up forming with a perfumer to really get their best.
7 seems like how many scents is one able to create? How do they just turn them out?
Yes. Thousands and thousands of modifications a year come from these perfumers. They're incredibly hard workers. The way it works is a perfumer will write a formula.
Yes.
Older ones will do it by hand.
Okay.
The younger generation does it on a computer and a software program, but it's the same thing. They both have to have knowledge of somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 raw materials.
Wow.
And it's like any piece of music, for example. They write their formula, but it's not necessarily perfect in the first try. So when they finish the first try. It goes up to a laboratory, which is in our offices here in Midtown. They have one or two assistants who work in the lab who will literally compound it on a scale. 10 drops of this, 3 drops of that. Certain materials have to be melted and, you know, dripped in. Then that particular oil is put into alcohol, which is, there are a number of different forms of fragrance, everything okay. from deodorant to body lotion, et cetera. But for the sake of explanation, let's talk about alcohol at a certain percentage level. They'll bring it back downstairs for the perfumer and someone like me to smell. We'll smell it. We'll talk about it. Sometimes we put it on our skin. Sometimes we know it needs work even before we do that. And it goes back.
Sometimes you don't
want to
put it on your skin.
Sometimes we think this was a terrible idea. Let's move on. And that's what we do all day.
Did you always know? Did you always have a nose for scent, for fragrance? Or
people ask all the time, oh, you must have an incredible sense of smell. And the truth is, I doubtfully have a better sense of smell than you or anyone else. What I have is a skill set. I know what I am smelling. I can apply a vocabulary, yes. and I sort of break things down in a way that you can't. But it's a skill set that you can train for. Certainly some people have more affinity towards it than others, but it's really, a perfumer is a different thing. That's a, as I said, an artist who really has an instinct for creation and being able to translate something intangible into something tangible. But my job is really something that is taught.
Okay.
And the best evaluators.
Is there a school for it, or is it sort of taught within
France,
the company?
In France, there are. The perfume industry is, you know, really its heart is in France and its history is in France. And so the French evaluators do go to a very rigorous school. In fact, the same school that perfumers go to more often than not. Here in the U.S., we don't have fragrance in our culture. So my training was on site at our company here.
Oh, how fantastic to get that experience early on.
It was a complete stroke of luck for me to stumble into it. So to answer your question, I don't know when I was first interested in fragrances. It really was when I first walked into my company and I happened to have met a friend through a friend. And what I loved about it is that it's really a cross-section between art and craftsmanship and business. So there is a very old world sense about it still, and many of the perfumers come from generations of Southern French, either raw material brokers or perfumers themselves. It's very much a heritage.
It's in there.
And it's makeup. You know, very, very serious and ingrained in their culture, and especially those people from the South of France. But yet it's an incredibly interesting business when you're talking about capturing people's emotion and you know, selling a product in a department store.
And it's really fascinating because you were talking a little bit about the science behind it and 3 drops of this and 10 drops of that and the alcohol and putting it all together. But it really does, you just said, come down to sort of capturing an emotion.
Yes.
And how do they capture an how do you evoke emotion with perfume? How do you do that?
Well, what's so interesting, and as you say, it's really rooted in science. The sense of smell of our 5 senses, the sense of smell is the only one that is really directly connected to the limbic part of our brain. So what that means is that unlike when you see a painting or you hear a piece of music, when you think about those things, it goes through your cortex. So it goes through the very logical part of your brain. So you'll say to yourself, oh, I like this painting because it's blue and I like blue, or it reminds me of a place I know. When you smell a fragrance, it goes right to that part of your brain that is ruled by emotion and
yes.
memory.
Yes. So if I smell Shalimar, it's my mother.
Exactly. And whatever feelings you have about your mother, that's
we
what
don't
you're
need to
gonna experience.
Today. I love you, Mom.
So what is so difficult and so fascinating about the world of fragrance is you have to try to figure out what nostalgic moments are important for certain cultures or certain age groups, what environment, you know, everything we are our experiences. So what's amazing is that Americans have very different comfort smells than, say, French people. I was talking yes. about this today. French people, marshmallow is a great example. So we as Americans know that, you know, marshmallow is something very sweet and fluffy and vanilla and sticky and bonfires. Yes, you may have a smoky element or you may have a graham cracker element, but it's very sweet, vanilla, yummy.
Yes.
French people know marshmallow to be somewhat vanillic, but there's an infusion of orange flower in their marshmallows. So when they talk about marshmallow, they're really talking about something that's very floral.
Yes.
Whereas we're talking about something that's very edible. So those kind of cultural references.
Okay, so fragrance is really cultural.
And very.
Would you have the same fragrance in for sale in different countries? Or how? Or
yes.
Is so it like Coke, which is supposedly different?
Different in each country, thanks to the sugar. The answer is yes. Big companies would much prefer to have one fragrance that sells around the world for economies of scale. And there are certain fragrances that have captured a global audience and have remained consistently bestsellers for many years. And whatever it is about those fragrances speaks to different cultures in different ways. But it is true that it's very difficult to find those unicorns because very often different cultures have different perceptions of things.
Of what that scent evokes and what it means to them.
Exactly.
And so when the perfumer and the evaluator are working together to create this scent, you know, how much of it is driven by sort of the customer saying, this is what I want, and I want a scent that evokes love or happiness or giddiness or, you know, melancholy, or I don't know how say this.
Right, no.
But, you know, saying I want it to evoke this versus the perfumer and the evaluator just saying, you know, here's what we think we should be doing.
That's an excellent question. It depends on the level of experience of the client. What I'll tell you is that the best fragrances, the ones that end up being the biggest successes on the market, are those that have an incredibly coherent relationship between the name of the product, the concept of the product, and the fragrance itself.
Okay.
So if you're going to call something, you know, L'Odyssée is the example we often use, which you may or may not know. It's a company, fragrance by Issey Miyake. And the concept was water. And the perfumer was told, I didn't work on this, it was before my time, but the perfumer was given this concept of water. How do you evoke water in a way that's memorable?
Yes.
And bottle looks like a drop of water. The fragrance smells very watery. It has almost like a melony smell. It's called L'Odyssée. So that kind of synergy is what really creates a great success.
It tells a whole story.
It tells a whole story. Tale. Exactly. And that's what you know, great fragrances do, is evoke a story or an emotion behind a story. So the more information, the more direction we can give a perfumer, the better it is. And it can be colors, it can be images, it can be emotion stories. The more you can direct the artist to create the product for you, the better product it's going to be.
Right, and when there's a whole strategy.
The whole strategy, exactly. And it is difficult to assess sometimes if someone says, you know, I really want to work on a product with, you know, sandalwood, and you as the evaluator don't like sandalwood. That's okay. You have to have an objective sort of point of view and say, okay, what's the best sandalwood for this particular project?
Yes.
So there is an element of sort of trying to step outside.
Because I'm hearing you say there's more than one sandalwood.
Oh, well, yes, that's a whole other topic. But it's important to sort of not do your best as an evaluator to not impose your personal preferences. Yes. And I try never to do that. On the other hand, whenever I'm working on something, it's important that I wear it like a regular consumer and decide, okay, can I smell it on myself? Do other people compliment me? What's the reaction I get from other people? So it's a back and forth of sort of subjectivity and objectivity, and it's tricky.
Would you say to somebody, if somebody smelled it on you and said, you know, oh, what are you wearing? Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to talk about it if it's not yet on the market?
No, I'm not allowed to talk about the specific product or client, but yes. I can say, oh, thank you so much, Emily. Do you like it? What do you like about it? What does it smell like to you?
Yes. And sort of get some direct on the spot. Do you do focus groups?
Yes.
Of course.
We do focus groups. We do a lot of qualitative testing. And in fact, one of the things that's evolved over the years I've been in the business is that more and more there's quantitative testing happening, which is which is, you know, good and bad. I think it's great, as I said, when you have the more information, the most information possible about name and concept. If you're smelling something without any context, it's hard to really assess it because, again, when you shop for something, it's in a context. You Yes. like a brand or you don't. You like a particular name or you don't. So I think testing is really important in the right way.
Okay.
But yes, we do a lot of it.
As long as people understand the context behind it and Exactly. what's trying to be Exactly. to be accomplished. Now, who, when you're thinking about creating fragrances and you're thinking about sort of what next and, you know, the client has come to you and said, this is what we're looking for, this is what we want to do. Who sets the trends for fragrances? Who really figures out, you know, what's next? How far ahead is it determined?
Right. Well, fragrance, like really any artistic endeavor, is a reflection of the sort of sociocultural goings-on of the society it's in. So in the 1980s, which was the very sort of, you know, big shoulder pads, over the top, gaudy, like you know, money is everything, punk rock. Fragrances were incredibly strong and overpowering and overwhelming. This is the age of poison in Georgia, yes. things that are really opulent. Then came the 90s and sort of the reaction against that, and it was all about, that's when we first learned about Zen and spas came to the foreground, yes. and fragrances were a reflection of that. So fragrances became much very transparent and watery and more for you, not for everyone else. So it's so interesting how fragrance are a reflection of the society they're in. So in terms of who sets the trends, I mean, it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy from the perfumers themselves. I mean, we it's not an outside source that sets a trend. We sort of do it ourselves, but it is always a reflection of the world we live in. So, for example, there is a lot of talk about small independent labels now like Lalabo yes. or things like that. And there's a lot of fragrances that are focused on particular raw materials. So sandalwood or tea or, you know, narrowly things, materials. And I think that was driven by this movement towards artisanal fragrances and people sort of looking for something beyond the typical department store offering that was more either natural, quote unquote, or authentic. So again, every sort of social trend right now, there's so much talk in the world about sustainability and climate change and naturals and, yes. you know, what do we do about our food and should we eat organic? Is that important? And again, that same trend is reflected in fragrances. So it's really important to sort of keep abreast of what's going on in the world around us. And we have an incredible marketing team that helps us do that. And we as consumers, you know, have to be aware of what's going on around us.
I think I did notice that Firmenich got some big recognition on the UN's global.
We are incredibly serious about sustainability and the idea of inclusive capitalism and really benefiting not only the family who owns the company, yes. but the employees but our stakeholders as well. And you're absolutely right. We are incredibly proud of our record in water conservation, and we have incredibly, you know, ambitious goals for reduction in our carbon footprint. We do incredible work with the Bill Gates Foundation to in our body care area to talk about malodor neutralization. Yes. So there are so many interesting things going on in the world of fragrance. But yes, this idea of doing good and fragrance for good is something that's really important to us.
It's really fascinating. I have so many clients. We have so many clients here who are asking us to really invest in companies that think through these issues. We have a whole portfolio just dedicated to investing based upon the 17 UN strategic global initiatives and, you know, saying we want to do business with and invest with companies that are, you know, looking at inclusion, yeah. that are looking at, you know, climate change, you know, who are really
That's
thinking
so interesting.
Through this.
Are they a particular age group or is this sort of across the board?
It's across the board, but it's certainly being driven by sort of the millennials.
Yes.
You know, by the younger generation.
I was just going to say, well, what I know about consumer behavior is that more and more we understand that millennials are savvy shoppers as, yes. you know, more and more people can get any information they want on the internet. So they are reluctant to spend on brands that don't have a particular purpose.
Right, that don't reflect their ideals.
Exactly.
And so I would say it was driven initially by the millennials, but I find that many of my sort of older clients mm-hmm. as well have really been responding to this idea that they can invest in a way that they can still do well while also doing good.
Well, and that's really the key, right? I think that you have to have sustainability and economic prosperity be hand
yes,
in hand.
Exactly. Because you know, your clients do not want, the consumer does not want a perfume that smells horrific.
Well, yes,
that
exactly.
That clears the room. But you know, it's really good for the
environment. It's really sustainable. Exactly. No, it's so, but we joke, but it's a really good point. I think we talk so much now about all natural and what does that mean? And the truth is all natural, A, is not even that good for you. It's certainly not good for the natural resources, no. But it doesn't smell particularly good.
Exactly. And so finding a way, how do you make the two go hand in hand? And how do you make something that's, you know, that's good for the world,
right,
and good for the consumer.
Exactly. And I think to that end, since, you know, I'm here, I'm going to make a little plug for us, that what we always talk about is the importance of marrying safe synthetics and naturals. And that's really, I think, quite misunderstood by the consumer in general. The idea of synthetic equals bad in many people's
yes.
minds. But the reality is safe synthetics that are, you know, done in plants with, you know, net
yes.
neutral carbon footprint, et cetera, are actually safer for your skin. They're more sustainable from the sense that they don't draw on natural resources. And they are actually important from a creative standpoint in terms of, you know, pushing the envelope creatively. So it's really important to have those naturals and synthetics working together hand in hand.
Well, and what do they say? Like, natural isn't always good. Arsenic is natural.
Well, that 100% true. Exactly. If you put cinnamon oil on your skin, you're going to get a rash. It's not natural.
Really?
Nature is so complicated and beautiful and fascinating, but it's really important to understand that things that are, you know, maybe inspired by nature, but not necessarily derived from nature, are really, really beautiful too.
Right, that they can have it going on as well.
Yeah.
Which is terrific. Now, do you think, you mentioned this a little bit before, but do you think that sort of the stage in one's life impacts the way that they approach fragrance? You know, in other words, does your strategy mm-hmm. change based upon the age mm-hmm. and or life circumstance of your consumer?
Yeah, I think certainly there is the idea that younger, you know, much younger people are more familiar with fruits and food and things that are less, quote unquote, sophisticated, whereas people who are a little older have more tolerance for, you know, more sophisticated flowers or spices. It's funny, I think more and more we talk about sort of a state of mind than an actual age group.
Yes.
While millennials, and you know, we're talking about like Gen Z now, have certain
yes.
consumer buying behaviors, I think olfactive taste is really more cultural than age-driven somehow. So I think we also, what we thought was true, is it not necessarily the case? So I'll give you an example. There's the best-selling fragrance in the world and has been for a long time is a fragrance called Coco Mademoiselle from Chanel.
Okay.
And that fragrance is loved by everyone from, you know, 12 to 120. It's really universal. Because I think it has something for everyone. It has a very sort of classic chypre, we call sort of a patchouli sort of accord in the back that's quite sophisticated, but it has actually quite a bit of fruitiness and freshness on top to appeal to people who are more comfortable with that. So honestly, the best fragrance, the fragrance we're all searching for, is something that really is universal and really is across all
right,
age
that
groups.
Somebody can start wearing it at 14 and wear
exactly.
it through to 84.
Exactly. What has changed over the years is it used to be people had sort of a signature scent.
Okay.
And that seems to have evolved now, and very few people I know have one in terms of all of our behaviors, right? With fast fashion and,
yes.
you know, everything available to us, you know, online, we tend to accumulate more. And it's the same with fragrance. We do tend to accumulate more fragrances for different moods we're in or different
occasions
exactly. And that is more a driver than the actual age itself.
Oh, that's interesting. So that people want to experiment more and try different things and wear them based upon their feeling as opposed to my mother and Shalimar.
Exactly.
Right, where that's been a sort of lifelong.
Right, that your identity used to be, okay, this is my fragrance, this is my identity. Your mother's was Shalimar, yes. And that is the common thing. Whereas now, if you're going to go to work, it's one thing. If you're going to go to the gym, it's another thing. And if you're going to go out at night, it's another thing. Or if you want to sort of go to sleep, it's another thing. So it's really about stages in your day versus stages in life now.
Do people wear scents to sleep?
I do.
Really?
Yes. And I know a lot of people who spray their pillows at night.
Okay, spraying pillows, I know of.
I think again, it's funny. I'm so used to being around, you know, Europeans and people who have fragrance in their culture more than Americans. Yes. And a lot of people do. Americans less so. But what's funny is that people don't realize that you have sort of, I think it's 14 fragrance touch points before you leave the house in the morning. So while you may not be spraying an alcoholic fragrance on yourself, your shampoo, your face lotion, your deodorant,
your makeup,
everything has some kind of fragrance in it.
Yes.
So even your laundry is a huge fragrance business. So the pajamas you're wearing and the sort of whatever your fabric softener is a fragrance.
Yes.
Somehow.
We use the laundress now in our household.
Yes.
And all I ever want to do is sort of snuggle and smell my kids.
You see? Yes. You see? Well, that's an emotion. That's you know, that's happiness for you. That's family for you. And that fragrance will always be that for you now.
Which will always be in there, which is a lot of fun. Now, so in one word, you wear them to bed, you wear them during the day, you wear them to different events. What fragrance are you wearing today?
People ask me that all the time. Or what's your favorite fragrance?
Okay.
And the answer is I wear what I'm working on. I literally wear something different probably every day because I work on different projects every day. Or if I'm working on one project, there'll be modifications of the same thing every day.
Yes.
It's very confusing for my husband. So I literally wear something different every day.
Do you ever wear more than one?
All the time. I don't have them on today, but usually I walk around with big dots on my arms.
Does that confuse your nose?
No, it's sort of, you know, I have one here, one here, one here, one here, one here, and I sort of experience them as I go through my day. But my favorite fragrances are those in which were important for me at particular milestones. So the fragrance I got married in.
Yes.
The fragrance that my kids' shampoo has. So those are the fragrances that are my favorite.
Right.
Because as I said in the beginning, we're all sort of just an accumulation of our life experiences, and that's what drives our fragrance.
Have you had a favorite fragrance get discontinued?
In fact, yes. The fragrance I got married in is a fragrance from Kate Spade, which at the time license was owned by Estee Lauder, and I worked on that fragrance.
Okay.
So it's very, very personal. And the license has since been purchased by others, and so the fragrance is no longer available. So I have to beg the perfumer to make it for me.
So they do. You have an in.
I have an in.
Now, how would somebody know if your company, you know, if Firmenich had worked on a fragrance or if it was natural or, right? Because you're talking about these fragrances and you're talking about, you know, you worked on this, you know, this fragrance. And how would somebody know who's, do you read the label?
No. Or? And that is not our intention. It's actually, we're happy behind the scenes.
We are behind the scenes
suppliers to our clients. And while it's not a secret that we're working on this, we're very happy for the limelight to be taken by the designer themselves or the particular brand. What has happened in recent years is perfumers, again, back to this whole cultural thing, in other countries are really celebrities, and really people here didn't understand that they existed. And more they're becoming higher profile, and you'll see them in the press more and more. And that's by choice of our clients trying to sort of elevate the perfumers.
And that may be part of this sort of whole
boutique and storytelling.
Sort of, you know, go in and see it made. And
exactly. And human touch behind fragrances.
Yes.
I think that's important to realize that fragrances are really something that is a very crafted item. How do I get this on this topic we were talking about?
We're talking about the Knowing who
created it. Thank you. So, yeah, so more and more perfumers are becoming a little bit more on the forefront, but we are definitely happy to have, like I said, the spotlight be on the product itself, the brand itself.
I think it's fantastic. Well, Dara Quinlan, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. It's been fascinating to hear about what you do, and it's surprising to me, actually, how similar what we do are to each other. Because I would not think that creating a fragrance would be quite as similar to creating an investment portfolio and plan. But there really is art and science in both of them.
Mm-hmm. And emotion, I imagine.
And some psychological work.
Yes. Listening, doing a lot of listening, I'm sure.
A lot of learning. And really sort of the art and science behind it is fascinating to me. So really, I appreciate your...
Oh, well, thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Of course. And if you'd like to speak with me and my family engagement team, you can reach me at emily.grace@bernstein.com. And if you're interested in learning more about Firmenich, you can go to www.firmenich, that's F-I-R-M-E-N-I-C-H.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Have a great day.